So here Bhaktivinoda Thakur has then established that the absolute reality, the topmost reality, is the Lord. And Zen is being established here as Tattva. And that anything else, then anything that has a meaning is this pada. And what makes that meaning observable, that's an artha. So then padartha. So anything outside the Lord is padartha, but the Lord is beyond, so he's beyond reasoning. Right. So then in the... Yes.
Question. Yesterday we spoke regarding Upanishadic presentation. So Upanishads give just principles and Puranas exemplify by stories?
No, I mean the Upanishads gives... It's being still being given in a story form. But there's not so much detail is there. Some is there. It's practical. It means it's practical. It's you're following somebody's life and something that they're doing. But not to the detail that the Purana does. So the story becomes much more prominent. The philosophical elements are the prominent in the Upanishad. But it's still, there's much of the time a story. Not always. But there's generally some aspect, there's a conversation, at least. Does that make sense? So there's always some discussion, but sometimes that discussion takes on more, so there's some other activity that adds to the discussion, but the discussion is the prominent. Like that. Purana will also have discussion, but in the discussion, the story itself becomes very, very large. Does that make sense? You know, it's like we see in the Bhagavatam is all the stories, but we don't necessarily think of the specific philosophy. You know, there may be a few chapters here and there, but the story takes up the prominence. But the story is illustrating that philosophical point. While in the Upanishads, the story will be much less than the philosophical discussion.
Just a side point. So we should be able to, bring out all those principles from the Puranic stories.
Yes. Just like you can take the Upanishadic points and apply them into the practical life. It's just that so much has been done in the Puranas, it makes it easier. You have some place more easily to start from, and the other one then... you have to contemplate it yourself and be able to find where you'd apply it. Does that make sense? So the Upanishads are meant more for someone on the platform of Gyan, because the contemplation is the prominent element. Does that make sense? So the first topic, then, so the ending his introduction then, Therefore, on this topic of reality, the first aphorism has been established by the author as follows. Sutra 1. Ekah paro nanyaha. The supreme reality is one without a second. Summary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. The Supreme Lord alone is the supreme reality. No other object can be realized as the ultimate reality. Because otherwise, as some may say, if everything is expanded from God and everything's non-different from God, then we say everything is God. But then the problem comes is that it is non-different from him, but at the same time, it's different. So there has to be that element. Otherwise, where you get people will just worship anything, anywhere, and they won't be developing their relationship with the Lord. Right? Or everything's God, so then there's no need to specifically deal with him. Sutra 2. Agunopi sarva-shaktir ameyatvata. The Supreme Lord is all-powerful due to his inscrutability, although he transcends the phenomenal qualities. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. The supreme reality is beyond the scope of the phenomenal and non-phenomenal qualities possessed by the sentient and non-sentient objects. How is it possible, then, for the reality to have any relationship with such objects? After all, it is generally observed in this world that a relationship between two objects requires certain similarities of their nature.
What is inscrutability?
Means...
You can't look at it.
Means it's...
Beyond the scope of perception?
Yes, beyond the... Scrutable means you can observe it or analyze it. Inscrutable means you can't... is beyond analyzation.
But the rest says that he is all powerful because of that.
Means he is all powerful because he is unable to be scrutinized. Means no one can scrutinize him. So therefore he's all powerful. You know what I'm saying? This is a show sometimes how this is not appreciated or understood is the point is because you can't be scrutinized, that gives you a position of authority or power. What can be scrutinized is what's considered more available or more common. Right? Does that make sense? So the modern idea that one is free and can go out and do whatever one likes, one feels it's a freedom, but it reduces one's position. Because one is actually scrutinized. You know, one can be scrutinized.
It's like the
women or the common man who goes out and just does everything and everyone sees him and sees how crazy he is and like this and that. So the point is being seen, or being able to be analyzed is what reduces one's power. Power is when one can't do it. Like that. Does that make sense? But here is that one can't understand, because knowledge is one of the opulent, one can't understand the Lord himself. It is only by his grace that you can understand the Lord. So through the process of devotion, then the Lord will reveal himself. But it's not that you can do something to make him reveal himself, force him. So that it leaves him in the all-powerful position. Is that so here is that the supreme is beyond the scope of the phenomenal and non-phenomenal. So that means the spiritual and material worlds and all the living entities, the Lord is beyond that. That's because he's something else. Everything else is padartha. He's not. He's tattva. So he's something different. Sometimes devotees get upset that we would say Krishna is beyond spiritual, because spiritual is something that can be has meaning and has forms. Krishna is beyond that. Right? But through his energy, he'll manifest himself.
There's another grammatical doubt. In the verse it says, his inscrutability, although he transcends the phenomenal qualities. Because although points to a contradiction, like he's he is strong although he is small. Let's say.
Although he's.
Let's say.
Although he transcends the phenomenal qualities, because. Someone would say you're powerful because of phenomenal qualities, but he transcends them. So power is still a quality.
I guess my question is why the verse is not reading, for example, all powerful due to his inscrutability because he transcends it. Because he's inscrutable because he transcends the phenomenal qualities. But this says he is inscrutable. You cannot scrutinize him, although he transcends the phenomenal qualities.
Let's see what happens in the commentary, because this is a sutra. You know? So the point is, in sutras, each word has a meaning. And so unless you know the definition of that meaning, it won't necessarily mean much to you. That's why the sutras are meant basically just for, you know, intellectual, academic kind of environment. While then the other scriptures use full verses, so they can give a fuller explanation.
Because inscrutability and transcending the phenomenal qualities seems to be somewhat synonymous.
My point is, unless you know what the words specifically mean, and also you have the element that someone's translating, yes. Because powerful, we would count as a phenomenal quality, but despite that, he's still powerful. No, the inscrutability is making the point that the jiva, through his intelligence, cannot understand the Lord. He's beyond understandability. And he's all-powerful, though he transcends the qualities. You know, in other words, he walks, but he does not walk. You know, like that kind of thing. The Upanishads are pointing that out. In other words, the Upanishads, one of the main principles is this, that. You know, there's this, the material phenomena, and then there's that, the spiritual. Right? So, the Lord is beyond this by which we are judging everything. Right? But he still is powerful. Like that. That's kind of... Otherwise, then a sentence like, he walks, but he does not walk. He's very, very near, but he's very far away. Then that would also grammatically probably not hold up. You understand? So the point is here it's not so much grammar. Like that. It's what the particular word itself means. And the difficulty in English is it lacks... a consistency of observable declension. Right? Though there is there, but if someone understands that more, he'll put it together so it holds together nicely. If not, it won't. But in the Sanskrit, by the endings, you know exactly which words connect to which words. You know, as in most languages of the world. But English doesn't. So it lends itself to great poetics and other kinds of things like that, but sometimes when you're trying to be very exact, it's a problem.
Because you can read a sentence.
Read it that. Okay. So he's beyond the phenomenal and non-phenomenal, and therefore, then, since he's beyond it, how would he have a relationship with it? Because relationships based on having common qualities. So means if he's beyond spiritual, how does he have a relationship with spiritual? If he's beyond material, you know, how does he have a relationship with the material? You know, like that. If the jiva can't understand him, how does he have a relationship? So then in the half-page footnote here, this would be an argument of the deists. Deism is a term used by the Calvinists in the 17th century. Deism is the belief in God as the first cause of the universe, who created the laws by which the universe is governed, but who is in no way immanent in his creation. It means he's created it, but actually it's running. He has nothing to do with. Like that. He's created all the elements and it's his laws by which it runs, but the running of it is he's not involved. That's the deist idea. Right? Because the problem is that we will see that there is seemingly fault in the world. Right? People are born poor, there's violence, there's envy, jealousy, all qualities we would consider not good. So if they're part of the creation and God's is managing it, then that would mean these faults they would put on God. Right? Because the nature of the conditioned soul is if you're wrong, if something happens to you wrong, it can't be your fault. It's got to be someone else's. Right? So ultimately then it'll be God's fault. So they separate God from his creation. You know, he's made it and made the rules, but he doesn't manage it. Therefore, they have to have someone else manage it, you know, like that. So it's a deistic thing. So it comes up when there's a problem, like if I'll say Krishna is the main quality that you're looking for in anything. So that means you can connect everything to Krishna, right? So it sounds good, but what's the first question that's going to come up? The first hand that will just suddenly spring up, what's their point?
Sinful.
They'll immediately go to, what about the sinful activity? Because that is deism that they're talking about. Because it's sinful, it can't be connected to God, therefore you say you can't find God there. And any time I bring that up, that's always the first question. So it's actually deism. You know, or the thing is, you know, seemingly there's some mistake in something, so Prabhupada can't make a mistake, so therefore he's from the spiritual world, but he doesn't actually know the material world, because this is, you know, some funky place. But so it's deism. They separate Prabhupada, put him on a pedestal in that, but we'll run the things here according to what we like, because Prabhupada doesn't know, because he knows the spiritual world, not the material world. We're from the material, we know the material world, so therefore we'll make the decisions. Does that make sense? So this deism as a impurity isn't uncommon. It's not common, but it's not uncommon. Right? So then that has to be dealt with here. Because that will be the problem is that he's beyond, therefore he can't be part of it. He can't be involved in it.
Is it an idea that appears also in the Sandarshan?
Sorry?
Is it an idea of deism? Because we know deism for, you know, the 17th century and all that, but is there some Vedic schools also who adhere to that idea of deism?
Most all of them do, but it's not because he can't be, it's just he's not. They don't discuss it. They accept him as he's the authority runs things. But he's doing it through the material nature. You know, it means he sanctions and all that. So they understand Paramatma, he sanctions and all that kind of thing. But he's beyond, and they don't really aren't worried about him because they're not trying to develop a relationship with him.
So it's a form of deism.
You can, but I wouldn't stretch it there. I would say it would be atheistic in that it's not understanding him as a person in the relationship, or it's unfortunate that they don't, but they're not saying he can't do it. Deism means they deify, but he's not involved. So he can't do it. He can't run this world. So the reason you get out, it means he gives his blessing, but you have to make the endeavor, which is fine. You know, we're saying devotional service, the endeavor is the most important, but here it's you make the endeavor. So it takes on the quality of karma. I've done the good work, therefore God gives us blessing. You know, I go to church every Sunday and I do all the things I give in charity, so why did my son have a car accident? You know, how did God allow this to happen? You know, I'm doing my work, where's the reciprocation? So there's the difficulty in that they're in deifying is it comes back to me doing the work. Does that make sense? So there'll be all these different things are all connected. So I wouldn't take the one and go all the way. Deism specifically is just that it's he's the cause of it, but he's not actually managing things. But in the Vedas, they know that he's, you know, how things run, the modes of nature and all these things. So they understand the connection. They don't have any idea, yes.
So in Vedism, we still consider ourselves controllers and enjoyers.
Basically, yeah. That's the thing.
Also that being the elements that some of these monotheistic traditions would say, God cannot come down here. Like the
yeah.
Christian.
Yeah, like that.
God cannot come.
Yeah, at the same time as then they're, you know, they have their man. So it's not well thought out. That's the difficulty. That's not well thought out. God's maintenance of the world means nothing more than the permanence of natural laws. Nature follows a regular course. The sole purpose of the world is to be the habitat of mankind. Right, so basically they've separated themselves from God. They put him on a pedestal, and then it's our place. So ultimately, you know, then it's up to us. It means he's made the laws. But as long as we follow God's laws but for our own purposes, that's fine. You know, so in other words, you can be a pious person just to enjoy yourself, and that's good. You're considered pious. You're a good person. Pious is good enough. Devotional isn't, you know.
That seems to be just like one step above materialistic atheism, where, because then they come down where there's just laws. You know, like if somebody put the laws there, and then you go to the point where there's not even a somebody, the laws are just there.
Yeah, but no, but they say he's the permanence of his laws, but the point is that everything's one step away from. You know, what I'm saying here is that you have that aspect, but here the point is not that. We're not actually, we're trying to get beyond the deism here. You know what I'm saying? So the discussion is about how, by not seeing the connection, by someone being beyond, there can be no connection. That's the difficulty. You know what I'm saying? So within materialism, there's so many varieties of it. You know, each one is not that much different from the other. You know what I'm saying? It's like you have karma and you have jnana. You know, so one is trying to enjoy and the other one is that you know, the pessimism about that you can't enjoy in the world, so you liberate yourself. But the monotheism comes when one is unable to make either of them work. So due to a lack of something, one takes that up. So it's a combination of both. You do work, you get good result, but at the same time, the material world, you know, is, you know, temporary and full of misery. So depending upon who's preaching at the time, you'll see more of the discussion about do good work and go to heaven, or, you know, the place is not meant to be involved, so don't get involved. Therefore, you don't even bother taking a bath or anything like that. Yeah, so it has both these elements, and it's seemingly personal, but at the same, and it has relationship, but at the same time, as there's no form, because he's beyond. So it leaves itself open to too many difficulties, like that. It lacks in, its theology is not somehow another deep enough. But amazingly enough, they have, you know, you can study it for years and years and years and get, you know, Doctor of Divinities and, you know, all these kind of things. So I don't know what they study, because somehow or another there's not a whole lot there. So they must be studied, yes.
Have you ever been in debates with some of these high-ranking theists?
They're generally easier to discuss with than a priest or a common or a lay, how you say, religionist, because there is more of a basis on philosophy. So then, I guess what they're doing is probably they study more of this Aristotle.
Okay.
That's probably where their theology is. But there's less difficulty discussing with them because it's based on intelligence. You know, they have faith and they have intelligence. While the general priest and your lay person is just faith only. So you can't discuss intellectually. You push it too hard, then you run the risk of that you're representing the devil, because you can say something that sounds logical but they don't understand, and so because it may cause problem for their faith, so therefore it's the devil. So like that. But no, I've discussed with theologians and they generally appreciate quite a lot. You know, that's it. Nature follows a regular course. The sole purpose of the world is to be the habitat of mankind. The deists opposed mystical and supernatural interpretations of Scripture. Human reason is the true measure of scriptural understanding. Many of the founding fathers of the United States of America, for example, Adams, Jefferson, and Paine, were of deistic inclination. So that means, is like we're saying, it's because that separation, it's man's place, man through his intelligence. There's no mystical, because for them, see, for us, there is no mystical. And when it is this Krishna's grace in that. It has that thing. But there is no mystique. We know exactly the mechanics. So they don't have, there's gaps there. That means when those gaps are filled, they can't intellectually define it. So therefore, there's some mystical or supernatural interpretation has to be applied. So that requires faith. But they only have faith in their logic, because God's not doing it. So that if he was involved, then you could say, yes, there's some mystical element. But he's not involved, so that means it's just practical. It's science or pragmatism.
That's why it's a great statement.
Yeah, because anyway it is, because God's not involved. So you can easily do that. So these persons, though, they would consider themselves, you know, righteous, you know, Christians, you know, but the emphasis is on we manage things. And so the true understanding is how the scriptures can be applied to, you know, managing the habitat, you know, like that.
I've had an experience that it's quite hard convincing them to stop eating meat because they have that concept. Their world too.
Yeah, there's their world. Also, you'll find the difficulty is that in the first chapter of these later, I mean, I can speak specifically for the St. James, like that. So I'm not sure if other languages translate that or they have different translations where they originate in. But in the original, in the Talmud, you know, which is a translation of, then it mentions that after Adam and Eve, you know, came into knowledge by eating the apple, then God got upset and he cursed them and gave them flesh to eat. So it's the cursed man that is that. But before that, then it says that they were given, you know, the seed and grain and you know, all these things of the field and all that. That was their food in the Garden of Eden. But when they were thrown out, then being out of the garden, then he cursed them and then they were given flesh. Because in the older English, meat simply means something that sustains you. It means grains. Just like the word corn means grain. It doesn't specifically mean corn. You know, it could be wheat, rice, anything. It's all corn. It just means grain. So before, meat also meant grain. Flesh meant, you know, what nowadays is called meat. You know what I'm saying? So these verses are left out. So it makes it a lot easier to be very adamant about, no, God gave us. You know, so the element of being cursed, that's left out of the same passage. You know, but they don't also connect with, if you're walking with God, you have this food. and those who aren't walking with God are that food. So why would you want to eat that food when you eat this? You know, that kind of thing. So they. On the other hand, according to the HarperCollins Dictionary of Philosophy, page 120, the philosophy of theism, in most interpretations, is God is partly immanent in the universe and partly transcendent. In essence, this definition is the Vedic philosophy of the Supreme Person. As stated in the Purusha Shukta, Rig Veda 10.94, with three-fourths of himself, the Purusha ascended. The other fourth was born here. From here on all sides he moved towards the living and the non-living. Again and again in the Vedic literatures we find references to the Tripada Vibhuti and the Ekapada Vibhuti, the three-fourths of the Lord's splendor displayed as the spiritual world and the one-fourth by which he pervades the material world. About the material manifestation, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 10.41, Yad yad vibhuti mat satvam shrimad urjitam eva va tat tat eva tat chatvam mama tejo nisha sambhavam. Know that all these opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations are born from a part of my total splendor. Because they oppose theism. The theories of deism, monism, pantheism, and dualism are actually atheism. Deism separates God completely from his material creation. Monism renders God partless. Pantheism confines him to the material universe. And dualism divides creation against him, placing part of it in the hands of a rival. Even major religious traditions like Christianity are influenced by deism and dualism. The English natural theologian Robert Boyle, 1627 to 1691, expressed open contempt for theism as a doctrine of infidels. When he drew up his last will and testament, he bequeathed £50 per annum forever, or at least for a considerable number of years, in order to institute a series of lectures for proving the Christian religion against notorious infidels, namely atheists, theists, pagans, Jews, and Mohammedans. Oh, monotheism and pantheism are synonymous for theism. Monotheism means belief in one God. In the Vedic religion, there is only one God, although he empowers servants who act as demigods on his command. These demigods are worshipped as God only by foolish people. Pantheism teaches that all things are imbued with God's presence. Because all things are in God. God is more than there is. He is all-conscious and the supreme unifying factor. Right. So you have all these different things come up, so that'll be discussed more in detail next year. Right. This doubt cannot be resolved by mental speculation. The Supreme Lord is endowed with infinite qualities, although he is beyond all qualities. This statement contradicts mundane logic and grammar. Therefore, the Supreme Reality is called inscrutable. Right? So just by understanding inscrutable, then it means he has and doesn't have. So that's what one can't understand by logic. So that's what puts him beyond. That's what puts him in the all-powerful position. There cannot be evidence from observation of the material world to prove the existence of God and give an insight about his nature. The classical examples by which we infer the existence of an invisible object by the signs of a visible object does not apply in the case of the Supreme Lord, right? Because that's how logic works. You're seeing something and there's something unknown. So you get an understanding of the unknown through the known. That's how logic works, right? You can see smoke, but you don't see the fire. Right? You can see the hill and you can see smoke. So the fire is unseen. But because smoke's connected to fire, therefore you can infer that there is fire. So therefore there's fire on the mountain. That's the point you want to make. Right? So the unseen is seen. So through the philosophy, through all these things, through logic, then what is unseen is made to be seen, right? But the point is God's beyond all this. So it's not by our intelligence, by studying the scriptures, all this, that we will therefore be able to understand God. It's by His grace alone. In other words, through the devotional process, He'll reveal Himself.
So does that mean there's a problem in trying to establish the reality of God using intelligent design as a preaching method?
Yes, but otherwise, what else do you have? I mean, you can use emotion, but then the emotion, if it's like, you know, there's God and all this, then you can establish that there is some supreme authority. It means there's some, it's obvious, means you can see that there's some authority by how well everything works. You know, that you can get. But then to establish a specific means of that authority, that would be your problem, because what's the authority for that? And then anybody with any kind of faith would be okay. And so that's not going to make for the development of a particular religion.
So you can't foresee, but you can't see.
Yeah, it means you can get an indication that you can't see. But even that indication is only by His grace that you have the intelligence to be able to notice, because He is intelligence. So it's only by His grace you can see it, because some people can't. You know, is that what you're saying? No external proofs are required to establish the existence of the thinker as it is a self-realized fact. Right? You don't have to prove yourself exists. So that's not a Vedic problem. Do I exist? Right? It may be a Buddhistic or something else, you know, or Macbeth may have these problems. But the it's not a problem because you're thinking, you know, therefore it's there. Right? So therefore the what is I think, therefore I am. Right, so you don't have a problem with yourself. It's everything else that you run into a problem with. You know? Similarly, the realization of the Supreme Lord through devotion is self-evident and does not need any support from sense perception and inference. Right, so. You don't need an external proof to understand you exist. So there's no external proof needed in the relationship between the Lord and the living entity. Like that. Yes?
Have you seen that Pratyaksha can support Shaktam in that regard? That
yeah.
We have heard the Lord's grace or the Guru's grace to get worthy, but we throughout, we are also perceiving, understanding Krishna, but it's not that Pratyaksha stands on its own.
No, it can't stand on its own. No, it can support. That's why it said pratyaksha and anuman here, but it didn't mention shabda or authority, because that comes from the Lord. But it's by taking the shastra and through our simply by studying it, you know, using our intellect, we will not still understand the Lord. It's by the Lord's grace. That means the chit potency descending through the parampara, that potency in the scriptures, then we're able to understand. Like that. So we exist and we don't need something separate to establish it. You know, it's established by itself. So in the same way, the Lord, His existence doesn't need something else to establish it. He establishes Himself. Right? Means our own intellect establishes we exist, so himself, He establishes His existence. The problem comes is for the, you know, these varieties of these atheistic elements that they can't bridge between the spiritual and material and beyond, the Lord's beyond, so they don't have access, because all they have is their intelligence. you know, their intelligence and what is perceived.
So God is always reduced to some sort of very powerful material authority.
Or just some powerful authority, whether he has material authority or not. The perception is material, though they may not attribute to him materialness. Does that make sense? So that you can do means, like in Nyaya and these Nyaya Vaisheshika, then God is there and he's transcendental, he's beyond, he's eternal. There's not a matter of he's just Brahman. But they're just trying to come to the Brahman platform. They're not trying to develop a relationship with him. Right? So he controls the world. So he controls, you do an activity, it's by his sanction you get the result. But the results are always material. So if you give up material endeavor, then you'll stop material results, so you'll be liberated. Right? So they do it through analyzation. That's the point. But they're not trying to develop a relationship with God. So you can have that. He's there and he's beyond. But in application, you know, or what you're trying to do, you can exclude him. You know, just like you can be cooking for the deities and be thinking of something else and not being absorbed at all in any devotional thought. So it can be done. You know, but if we say, you know, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm cooking for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because, does that make sense? So here they have that intent that God is there. You know, so there's something beyond. But the material world, it's nothing to do with him. So what I do here, we follow his laws, but I do what I want with him. I interpret the laws and apply the laws.
So purely mechanical?
Yes, purely mechanical. You know, though there's some element of faith that there is God, but in dealing, then you have to do it yourself.
How would these people relate to the concept of consciousness? Is that also just mechanical, like a symptom of some mechanical?
Well, I mean, if they're how you say, generally of a religion, then that will be, you know, God will have created the living entity, but the difficulty comes is that on the material platform, both karma and jnana, it will be produced by material energy. Mm. So therefore, God is taking some dirt and turning it into man. So that still means consciousness came from the material energy. They don't understand it as such as material energy.
The seven-day adventist was very, very well learned in the Bible. And he was having a nice discussion, but he was telling me that you have the spirit of God and then you have dirt. And when you mix it together, that's when you have a living entity. They had no concept of the soul, really. That,
yeah, because then how much of that God is there?
Then they interpret the soul to the mind, or the soul to be the thing, when the dirt and the spirit of God is put together, and you have the soul.
Yeah, it works, but the problem is how much of God? What aspect of God?
Basically, you don't think too much about it.
That's the point, is there's not a whole lot of thinking there. So they've developed some lines of thought to answer these questions, but unfortunately they'll be based on the same material concepts of karma and jnana, so they'll always be faulty.
That's developing theories to get themselves away from the subject.
Yeah, or to explain what their concept of the subject, but it keeps them away from actually understanding the absolute reality. You know, because it doesn't fill in the gaps; it just fills in the problems they have with the gaps. You know, so. Is that? Therefore, the conclusion that the Supreme Lord is endowed with infinite potency, in spite that he is beyond the scope of qualities. This is possible due to his inscrutability. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Mantra 5, in this connection, two words, the revealed scriptures often apply to the Lord, saguna, with qualities, and nirguna, without qualities, are very important. The word saguna does not imply that when the Lord appears with perceivable qualities, he must take on material form and be subject to the laws of material nature. For him, there is no difference between the material and spiritual energies. Lost all my paperweights. For him, there's no difference between the spiritual and material energies because he is the source of all energies. As the controller of all energies, he cannot at any time be under their influence as we are. The material energy works according to his direction. Therefore, he can use that energy for his purposes without ever being influenced by any of the qualities of that energy. In this case, sense, he is nirguna, without qualities. Nor does the Lord become a formless entity at any time, for ultimately he is the eternal form, the primeval Lord. His impersonal aspect of Brahman effulgence is but the glow of his personal rays, just as the sun rays are the glow of the sun god. Right? So nirguna means he doesn't have any material qualities and he's not controlled by the material energy. Saguna means he's full of transcendental qualities. So this is the difficulty that comes when you're discussing the tattva, is that you're going to have these two contradictory elements, or seemingly contradictory elements. It's always going to be the problem. So the difficulty in understanding always comes back to this, is where to define what is with qualities that are spiritual, that there's no material, what is material and doesn't have spiritual. You know, so to discern that, that's the point. So the does that make sense? So it may raise a doubt that if such controversial conclusions are repeatedly accepted, it will give way to irrational beliefs, because we're saying two contradictory things are reconciled in the one. So if we bring this up repeatedly, then you can end up with very illogical understandings and presentations. In reply to this, the author says that the assimilation of mutually contradicting qualities is not uncommon for the Supreme Lord. The contradicting qualities are impossible for the phenomenal objects, but the Lord is non-phenomenal. Otherwise, how is he the Supreme Lord? Right? It means we'll have a problem with it because we only know the material world. So he's beyond the material world, so what's the problem in him having that? Right? So Sutra 3. Virudha samanyam tasmin nachiram. The perfect assimilation of innumerable mutually controversial qualities is not uncommon for him. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. In the Supreme Lord, there are innumerable mutual contradictory qualities. Whatever we say about him becomes indicative of controversy. When we say that he is the creator, it suggests the mutation of the immutable. When we say that he is the protector, we accept that he is a doer, although he is aloof. When we say that he is the destroyer, it suggests inauspiciousness in the all-auspicious Lord. By saying he exists, the Lord who is beyond time is confined in limits of time. There are innumerable similar mutually contradictory qualities that can be ascribed to the Supreme Lord. These apparent contradictions cannot be resolved by mental speculation, right? Because we think, the intellectual thinks, by intelligence he's going to solve everything, but it doesn't. Like that. So, he'll never be able to work it out.
Sutra 2 and 3 refer to the second point, third point of Dashamura, that he has all the energies.
I think it's more just establishing him, that he is the supreme. He's beyond the qualities. He's one without a second, is beyond the qualities. And all these controversial qualities are perfectly resolved in him. So we're still discussing him. Energies will come up later. Right? Because the first point is he is the supreme absolute truth. These apparent contradictions cannot be resolved by mental speculation. Attempts to solve such problems by mundane logic are fruitless and lead to atheism, charvak, etc. The only solution is to take shelter in devotional service, which preliminary stage and root is called faith. By this self-evident faith of the soul, one can realize the truth about the perfect assimilation of all the mutually controversial qualities in the Supreme Lord. Okay, so here's 4 and 5. Well, before it was saying, was it 5 and 6? There was that overlap of qualities that didn't make sense. 4, 5, and 8. But at the same time, he was mentioning someplace. Yeah, 4, 5, and 8. And then he says 6 and 7. Oh, I see. Just 6 and 7 is saying you must know the greatest of all, who is described in 4, 5, and 8. Okay, that makes sense. Now, okay, so that means one has to have, only through devotional service can you understand the Lord, and that means then the preliminary to start that is faith. Now that's going to be a problem for the atheistic or the intellectual, because his point is no, it can only be understood through the intellect. And which on one level sounds very nice, but then you're saying that to measure one thing means to measure all different varieties of whatever there is to measure, only one instrument is to be used. So let us say I have a thermometer. So everything has to be, if it can't be read by the thermometer, then it doesn't exist. It's of no value, right? So therefore, you know, this color scheme, you know, in the living room that the wife just put up doesn't matter because my thermometer can't detect it. Like that. But what I can do is go over to the curtains and tell that, you know, in between the folds of the curtains, it's a touch warmer than, you know, behind the curtain or, you know, underneath the curtain. So I can tell those things about the curtain, but I'll never be able to understand the color, right? And let alone things like what feelings you have on seeing them and why you would want curtains like that and that style or that color, right? So this is the problem. They're saying is by intellect, if it can't be understood by intellect and then, you know, specifically in some circles by math, then it's not real, right? Yes. Yes, so therefore, this answers his question, or doubt, that because the Lord can't be understood, that puts him in the powerful position. Makes us the subordinate.
Not that he was doing the air force is more powerful than earth.
Yes, so that's a disturbance. It's a disturbance.
But she is here to drive on the same car with the air. In some ways.
I'm trying to think of. No, I thought of the domestic. International, I don't even. Oh, yeah, that's really simple. Yeah, there's some bureaucrats there that give you a hard time, and then there's some guys outside that deal with your luggage that are simply trying to figure out how to open it and get out something of value, if there is something of value inside. And then there's a whole bunch of guys outside trying to get you to take their car so that you can pay them some money. I leave anything out?
Beggars.
Huh?
Beggars.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Well, that's just like a little sprinkling on the side. You know, like spice. Okay. So the thing is they, if they can't grasp it with their intelligence, it makes them insecure. So that puts them in a junior position, but their false ego is too great to allow that. So they have to say anything that I can't conceive of isn't real. You know, but then but then that's such a weak position because there's other intellectuals greater than them. And so they will feel that their theories don't mean anything. You know, like that. They'll try to find some fault.
It's like the position of the ostrich, right? If you can't see it, nothing exists.
Yeah. But here it's that if you can find fault in something, then you are superior to it. Because finding fault means you've been able to analyze it. Means of his own faculties. Of course. No, what I'm saying is that if you just take one sense and say you're going to work out everything from that, then you're going to miss out on something. If you use your eyes, you won't be able to get taste. If you use taste, you won't be able to get, you know, so all these different things are a problem. So the difficulty is here is that God is beyond, so you're not going to understand him. But the point is why would you want to understand him? Right? Because somehow or another, the soul isn't satisfied in the environment here, or at least the way it runs. You know, if an individual would probably be quite happy if, you know, he had plenty of money and power and all his relatives and friends, you know, were always very enthusiastic and everything like that, but that just doesn't happen. Let alone that everybody would be like that, you know. So then, the difficulty comes up is one can't be happy here. So that means, since the soul by nature wants to be happy, then there must be some happiness beyond this phenomenon, right? But the problem is even the phenomena beyond, then it's on how are you going to perceive it, since you only have material intelligence. So that means then that the what's transcendental, what's beyond, would have to enter this, but at the same time it's not part of this, right? So that was why the verse before is that can be done, is that the Lord can be involved but at the same time not be involved. So that would mean then he can descend through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And therefore, the intelligence becomes empowered with the spiritual potency. Then one can understand. Right? So that's why it's important, this process. Because otherwise, you know, there is no way. Because they'll say, no, you have to logically explain it. But why do we, just like to say, well, there's God, you know, and like that, well, the scriptures say, well, you know, who wrote the scriptures? God. So they'll say that's circular. But if you say, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong? Okay, it's circular. So what? You know, what's the problem? Well, it's not logical. But who said that that's logical? Your logic. So it's the same argument. It's the same weakness. They'll say it has to be understood by intelligence. Who said? I say, because logic is, you know what I'm saying? So they'll try to present themselves that they're superior, but it's only because that superior comes from analyzing, and that's the point, is that they've come to the limit of that. And so God makes them insecure because he can't be analyzed. Or they'll make a mundane concept of him and then analyze that, and then in doing so they'll find fault. They're not analyzing. The person who needs to analyze is not analyzing, and then all the good qualities, and therefore becomes more devoted.
Are we not analyzing God here?
But what did we just mention about the chit potency? You miss
it. Doing it in Parampara.
Means the Lord comes into. Means
oh, yeah, comes,
yeah. Yeah, through the chit potency. Yeah, yeah. So therefore, even though this is a stack of papers with some ink on them and some kind of runes of some sort, you know, Anglo-Saxon runes, then and we're using, you know, the material tongue is vibrating, the material air which moves through the material ether, the like that. It's the chit potency that makes it work. That's why you give this book to, you know, some non-devotees. They can sit all day and they'll still won't get anything from it. Like that.
As you were mentioning about, you know, all the person goes and tries so many things in the world and he's trying to be happy, but he cannot get any happiness. So the different endeavors, he's never getting happy. Then he starts to figure out that there must be a place where there is such a thing as happiness.
If he's intelligent,
yeah.
Because normally what happens is if you can't be happy here, they don't know of another place, so they want to get rid of their existence. So that's what the pessimism is, or the gyan.
So, I'd like you to comment. As Prabhupada said in one of the purport, Prabhupada said that spirituality is foreseen in the mode of fashion, in the refinement of culture. Not seen, but foreseen. It's like when, you know,
that there's something beyond.
They're trying to, you know, make good music, good things, and then they start to sort of, you know, they're probably moving into goodness.
The experience is then what's important. Because when there's refinement, why is there refinement?
Because they're looking for pleasure.
Yeah, so the experience becomes important. Just straight mechanics is just to get something done. But sophistication, refinement, then there's the element of that there'll be some farther pleasure. So that means is that element is what they're looking for. So they're in pursuance of the original cause, but they don't know that. Right? So they're bringing their sophistication, you know, to some element of the formal cause. So it's just getting...
They may start thinking that there must be such a thing as that, and they can't perceive it.
Yeah, I mean, you can, but it's just, you're doing something, and if you can refine it, that means there's more beyond, so they've gotten to a particular extent by the sophistication rather than the gross. But that would mean if you carried on the process of sophistication, it should get more developed. Is that what you're
saying? Then you enter goodness.
Yeah, but still, it'll just be goodness. Therefore, it can only give an idea that something may be there, but you can't understand what's there.
So in goodness, one would feel that the sense that there is an order?
Yeah, because knowledge is inherent in goodness. But the point is goodness isn't good enough
because
to understand the Lord. You know, to understand that something's there doesn't mean you understand what's there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's why many people, you know, they believe there is something. You know, like
yeah. This has to be. There's something. But so that's a start. So then you just take that something and then start from there.
When chit potency empowers one to understand?
When means you want to know if it was at 10:03 and 32 seconds, or what do you mean by when?
What qualifications must appear in a person being exposed to the Guru Sadhu Shastra that he becomes empowered to understand?
He says the preliminary stage in root is called faith. Yeah, so when there's faith in, you know, the absolute truth as given by the Parampara, then that's the...
But that also has to be realized in the Parampara's faith. You have to receive it as well.
No, but it's still, the person has faith that he wants to associate with, you know, wants to, that this looks like something's there, so that's called Shraddha. So that's the beginning. Then he can then, by the association of the devotees, then become convinced about the process, and by following that process, become fixed in the process, right? And then like this, it continues.
And also the element is often explained that it is causeless, you know, causeless mercy. Means
it means there's no, you haven't done anything material to deserve it, right? So it's the Lord's mercy, because just because you thought there's a supreme and you'd like to know something about it, so what? You know what I'm saying? Why does that matter? You know what I'm saying? But 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair in an unlimited, you know, universe decides he wants to know why he's here. So what? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Like the child says, you know, his mother says, do this, and he says, why? Does that matter? You know what I'm saying? Does it really matter? He said, why? Now the whole world's got to stop and everything like that. So if you explain it to him, it's for his benefit. But he's supposed to do it. So it doesn't really matter that he wants to know why. But because it will help him in that, and that's the whole, there's a higher purpose, therefore you explain it.
For the devotees, they'll be looking for that as an opening, when, you know, when somebody wants to know,
yes,
why am I here?
Yes, so that's the point, it's causeless mercy. They don't necessarily deserve it. But it's the Lord's grace that they get it. Is that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, when Prabhupada says that to understand Gita consciously is theoretically accept Krishna as birth of the world, mm-hmm, does that work because that is an aspect of faith?
What was the question?
Theoretical.
Yeah, it means that in the Gita it says that to get an entrance into it, one has to start by accepting the spirit that one is. There is God, and we're His part and parcel.
At least theoretical.
Yeah, we could say it's like a theoretical faith. So it's at least enough. It's enough faith to accept that this theory might be something of validity. So you have to start with something.
It gives you a basis to analyze the idea of
argument. Yeah, well, I mean, it gives the proper perspective through which one can analyze. Yes?
I remember one time we discussed that even with material knowledge, there has to be some initial faith there to learn something.
True.
You know, you have to trust that the lecturer knows his field, the textbook is correct.
Yeah, yeah, it could be that. It's just a, you know, spurious copy made by some old grandmothers down the road that hate teenagers, right? So, you know, like that. So. Like, what do you call it? Yeah.
History books are a good example.
History. Yeah, I mean, anything, science, anything. It means just, you know, you get on a bus and it says it's going to Calcutta. You know, what if it's not? What if they wanted to get your money and they're going to just take you up the road and dump you out? You know?
Or they forgot to change the sign.
Yeah, they forgot to change the sign. Actually, they're going to Tallahassee.
On the bus ride.
On an Indian bus.
Yeah. Then that's when you would actually prefer it's Timbuktu, right? Yeah, so there'd have to be some element. Means there's always, you know, it says here, you have to take shelter in devotional service. Preliminary stage is faith. Faith only comes by the association of devotees. But you only get that association when there was shown some spark of interest. You know what I'm saying? So there's always that, you know, smaller and smaller, like that. So it's basically just by God's grace, because He makes the material world so that one will automatically be frustrated. And because the nature of the soul is eternal and full of happiness, that at some point, and because He's conscious, at some point He's bound to ask why. right? So it's still God's arrangement that he's made that. It's not that the living entity, because he decided to come here, he deserves, you know, to know why and to go back to God. But it's just the way God wants it. So it's his causeless mercy. You know, even if one's, you know, demands to keep taking it back and back and back. Does that make sense? The problem is at some point faith has to come in, because there is faith in anything. You know, it means, as someone very intelligent we discussed, you'd have to be really like say steeped in faith and science to say that all matter of the whole creation has been stuffed into one, you know, infinitesimal spot without even discussing who stuffed it there. And then, for some reason, it explodes. Why would it explode? If it's been there for so long, why can't it just remain unexploded?
You got bored or something.
Yeah, but is there something there that is a catalyst that caused that? Well, all that, they don't even discuss. Absolutely not. They'll discuss the trajectory when it comes out, you know, and what speed it goes, and all these different things like that. But the preliminary is faith. This is the fun part, because they don't understand that space is an element. So without space, where is that going to expand to?
Actually, some of the physicists now, when they get into this, what they call this, you know, this, you know, the space between stars, where there's supposedly nothing, and then when they observe it, there's a lot of things happening into emptiness. And so they're coming to the point that actually it's an element, because it vibrates.
It
vibrates. And then they came to, then somebody was making apology to the alchemist, that, because that was the main reason of the split between the chemist and the alchemist, is that this ether element that was never observed. And then they was like, oh, maybe they were right.
So now they can start making gold again, right? Do something useful rather than spend money. Let's make money. Right? Yeah, why don't they go back into that? Right? People would much more appreciate the quantum physicists that they were producing, you know, truckloads of gold rather than spending it. You know?
Start wearing the quantum hats
again.
This principle here. You mentioned, I think, last year that it's only by the grace of a devotee that we got in contact with this knowledge, so that by our own thinking we could not have figured out that Krishna was the soul. And then, to summarize this contradictory element, it's only by the association of realized souls that we can actually receive that with Krishna. Is that what he's trying to show us?
Basically, because it's that all this is coming through it by the Lord's grace. So in other words, the Lord can't be known. He's beyond intelligence. The point of making that is one has to have that faith and take up the devotional process. It's not that you don't apply your intelligence, because if we're saying that activity is the central feature of the devotional aspect, then activity happens with intelligence. So therefore, intelligently applying our activities, and in the Upadeshamrita, then Utsahan, or enthusiasm, is, you know, the proper, how you say, applying intelligence. What is it?
Endeavoring.
Yeah, endeavoring with intelligence. So that means the two go together. Right? So some make endeavor with no intelligence, and some use their intelligence with no endeavor. Right? So that's your Buddha and Mayaya Pratigyana. Right? So then, so the two naturally go together. So then one can, so therefore that, having that faith and making that endeavor, then one will be able to understand, right? And one can realize means you're able to experience it. It's not just intellectual, it's actually you're able to experience it. Does that make sense? In Sri Upanishad, mantras 4 and 5, it is stated, although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. So any grammatical questions here? No? Okay. Srila Prabhupada explains the inconceivable nature of the Lord and his potencies in his purport to Mantra 5. Here is a description of some of the Supreme Lord's transcendental activities executed by his inconceivable potencies. The contradictions given here prove the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. He walks and he does not walk. So it proves, means we're saying, well, this doesn't make sense, but it actually proves that he is beyond, because it can't be, does that make sense? It can't be understood. Like that.
It's like the Singapore airport.
Huh? Yes, like the Singapore airport. So now is the Singapore airport an expansion of Godhead? Because it can't be understood.
Well, it makes you feel very, very infinitesimal.
Yes, yes. Or is it a process? Is it part of the process of self-realization? Because you can't understand it, then you feel your infinitesimalness and all that. So that means it brings you a step closer to self-realization.
And your dependence on higher authorities.
Yes, like that.
And that you need a guru. You
know, yeah.
You need a follower.
You also need a suitcase full of money, but you know that's another thing. But that's not good.
That's your devotional prayer.
Because what's the use of figuring it out if you can't, you know, once you figure it out, you can't go into the shop and buy something. Ordinarily, if someone can walk, it is illogical to say he cannot walk. But in reference to God, such a contradiction simply serves to indicate his inconceivable power. With our limited fund of knowledge, we cannot accommodate such contradictions. So here Prabhupada's pointed out, we'll say, no, but that doesn't make sense. But Prabhupada's pointed out, we have a limited fund of knowledge. That's why we can't, it's a contradiction to us. If your fund of knowledge is greater, you could appreciate it. Like that. And therefore, we conceive of the Lord in terms of our limited powers of understanding. For example, the impersonalist philosophers of the Mayavad school accept only the Lord's impersonal activities and reject his personal feature. But the members of the Bhagavad school, adopting the perfect conception of the Lord, accept his inconceivable potencies and thus understand that he is both personal and impersonal. The Bhagavatas know that without inconceivable potencies, there can be no meaning to the word Supreme Lord. Right? So, in other words, inconceivable potencies, you're talking about the impersonal aspect. Right? But the point is then that's because he has that makes him the Supreme Lord. He's the Supreme Person because he has inconceivable potencies. So because simultaneously is inconceivable, it means a person and impersonal. That's what puts him in the position he's in. You know, we don't have an impersonal aspect. Right? Does that make sense? Because we don't have potencies. We are a potency. Does that make sense? So it puts God in a different category. That was the point made before. He's beyond the phenomenal and non-phenomenal. He's in his own category. The fact is that there is nothing but God within and without. Everything is a manifestation of his different energies. And in this way, there is a oneness among his diverse energies. Right? Although there is oneness, however, the Lord in his personal form still enjoys unlimitedly all the pleasures enjoyed minutely by the tiny part and parcel living entities. Right? So everything is him in that, but he's still beyond that. That's why it mentions he is the superior quality. Right? Because even you take like before we were saying, and then the example comes up, we say he's everything, then immediately the one comes up with sinful activity. Why sinful activity? Why not pious activities? You know what I'm saying? You understand? because it could possibly have something to do with the particular social stock that we're from, right? You know, so then so sinful, you know, life being, you know, the essence like that. So immediately you want to get, okay, if God's everything, let's get to the essence. So what about sin? Yeah, you know, so the thing is here is that he is the superior quality. So we'll say something, so let's say there's intoxication. So therefore, what someone's looking for in the intoxication, that's Krishna. But the point is what actually is that they're looking for? You know, it makes them, let's say, happy, or makes them like that. So happiness is a superior quality, right? So it's not the qualities of, you know, what it does. You know, it may have effect on the body and mind, or socially, or how that's not the point. The point is that higher quality is what they're looking for. You know what I'm saying? So even someone's doing something atrocious, they're looking for a higher quality. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like someone's performing genocide, but their idea is clear the area so that we can have a nice peaceful environment. You know what I'm saying? So they're looking for the peace. So what they're looking for is actually a higher quality, but their method of getting it has nothing to do with that higher quality. So that's why they don't get it. They don't end up being peaceful. Right, you know, they end up in Argentina, right? Didn't catch that one.
Maharaj wants to tell the story of a person with an umbrella, with a beautiful woman and Brahman.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the same thing. He was looking for beauty, but yeah, the ultimate beauty.
Yeah, but it's not. It's that the beauty is there. It's not the woman. That's why all the others say, yeah, look at this, you know, Vishayi. And Ramanuja says, you know, because he was saying, well, anybody can become a devotee. And they were saying, no, only someone who's pious and qualified. He says, no, anybody. And so, you know, he said, you know, so I'm not sure if he chose or they chose, but he says, you know, we'll make him a devotee. And then they looked at it, and this guy's a gross materialist, you know, he's just so absorbed in the girl. And so Ramanuja asked him, what are you looking for in this girl? Right? So this is what we're talking about. He didn't, you know, he's saying, so he said, what are you looking for? He says, I'm a worshiper of beauty, and this girl's beautiful. There's no other girl here more beautiful. So therefore, you know, I'm respecting that. So he said, if I can show you something more beautiful, you'll worship that, of course. So then he showed him. Does that make sense? So that's the point is that if they can get that quality somewhere else, then why go to the trouble that especially sinful activities carry with them?
Short one. So Prabhupada refers to Brahman here as impersonal activities of the Lord.
Yeah. Because it's the qualities of their potential interaction, because it's the Lord and His internal potency that are the manifestation, is the potential activities that are here. So it's an activity, but you can also say all this is created. This is all created from Brahman. It's through Brahman that this is all made. Like that, because it's all created, spanning from the Virat.
But in an impersonal way, I guess.
That there, but it's there's something subtler. It's one acts, but he does not act. Right? It's the same thing. Is that there's that potential one can perceive that because that's what's going on. It's a dynamic. That's why the Mayavadis, they actually have no idea what Brahman is. An impersonalist has some more idea, but it's not so dynamic.
Because they say not this, not that, not this, not that, instead of this, and that.
Yeah, it means it's all Brahman. So they're taking it back with what is the Brahman element. So, but that Brahman element's in everything, so it can be found everywhere.
So instead of going not this, not that, we should go this and that also, and that also. And that.
Can be, but what they're trying to say, it's not that, it's not, what is this right there? What is that? But what does that mean?
but it's an energy which basically comes back to Brahman.
Yeah, that's the point, is that it's not a pillar, it's not the bricks, it's not the mortar, it's not the rods, it's not the design. It's the Lord and His energies that are the pillar. And through the gross matter, then following that blueprint, you can make this pillar, and it does that work. But the actual work is being done by the Lord and His potency. It's not done by the bricks. So we think it's the bricks that are doing it, but it's not. It's the Lord who's doing it. But it's His law, so He'll manifest this particular potency in a stack of bricks. You know, if we took a bunch of shaving cream and stacked it up here, it wouldn't happen. Does that make sense? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samadhi Thāpaki Vṛndi ki, Jai Jai Gauri.